You're listening to the 5 Leadership Questions podcast. Before we get started, we wanted to let you know about a free resource that we're offering, an e-booklet by Todd Adkins called Developing Your Leadership Pipeline. This booklet will help you and your church leadership team begin to formulate a leadership pipeline from concept to structure to training in your own church. To download, go to lifeway.com/churchleaders and select the free e-booklet tab at the top. Again, that's lifeway.com/churchleaders and select the free e-booklet tab, and you can download it there. Now, here's the podcast. Enjoy. Welcome to the 5 Leadership Questions podcast. I'm your host, Barnabas Piper, here with Todd Adkins.
What?
Todd is feeling musical today, as you can tell. Today, our guest is Trevin Wax, who is a coworker and a friend. Trevin is the managing editor of the Gospel Project, which is one of our main curriculum lines here at Lifeway, which has over 1 million people using it every week in churches, small groups, studies, whatever context. That's a lot of humans using the Gospel Project. And so Trevin helped develop that, now helps manage it and continue to expand it and develop that content. He's also, and this is a mouthful, the director of editorial and author development here at Lifeway.
He's the black hand.
That's right.
That's one of the titles I actually have to think through before I say it. Like when they ask me, what's the official title? I have to think, does editorial come first? Does author come first? Is it authorial? Is it, anyway.
Just call yourself the black hand.
Which means that all of the written words that Lifeway publishes have an editor who goes through them. And Trevin helps all the editors be better at their job. And then all of those written words have authors, and he helps all of them be better at their jobs too. So that's a lot
That's a good way to put that together. Do you want to like write the mission statement for my life?
Yeah, man, I'll write your resume for you when you leave and go try to make more money somewhere else.
He'll have someone edit it, of course.
That's right. Yeah. You can editorially direct my work.
I'll edit your work. Yeah.
Well, Trevin, tell us a little bit about yourself other than the resume stuff that I said. So your family, what did you do before you got to Lifeway? How did you get to Lifeway, et cetera?
Yep. So I grew up in the South, so I'm here from Tennessee is my hometown now, or my home state. I'm living back in my hometown.
They didn't really teach geography in Tennessee.
I knew he was going to make a Southern joke.
He's from Tennessee, Tennessee.
The listeners do not understand what it is like to work with Barnabas and the Southern jokes.
And mainly about driving and weather and occasionally education.
Yeah,
yes.
I was gonna wait, but man, so who are the favorite office mates you've ever had? Like neighboring offices?
Oh, you're already asking me that question. Yeah. Well, I'm gonna offend people. I worked next to Matt Capps for a while, and Matt is a pastor now in North Carolina. He worked with us on the Gospel Project for a couple of years and helped us get to that million user mark. But Matt, really good sense of humor.
He was hilarious.
Yes.
He probably still is. I don't know, because I don't get to talk to him anymore.
Yeah, he still is funny. Well, I still get texts occasionally on certain things. So
mostly, can you tweet this?
Right. Yeah, he's one of the
funnest.
Hey,
can you retweet this? Is this retweet worthy?
Yeah. That's his North Carolina voice.
Yep.
He only asks you that question.
Maybe.
Not me.
It's true. But text you as a friend.
Yeah, he's one. And I mean, I've worked across the hall from Barnabas and Todd, and it's always a little bit loud and noisy on that side of the hall. But now
boisterous.
That is not. Actually, Barnabas took my old office.
It's true. When I came here, Trevin vacated an office just so I could have it. And I got the better view.
Yeah. Well, actually, he got the better office, though, I think.
He got a bigger office, but I got the better view, I think.
Yeah, I love when the sun came in the windows of that office. This is really nice.
Yep. If you have like seasonal
affective disorder?
Yeah.
Disorder?
The one where you need sunshine or you get cranky? My office is a great one.
Yeah.
I don't have that problem, but Trevin does.
Yeah.
So
I'm a really
cranky
person.
Back to the question that I asked.
Sorry.
Tell us
about
your
hometown is Tennessee.
That's right. My hometown. Okay. So I forget where my hometown was because I lived overseas for so long. Now I lived in Romania. I moved there when I was 19, bought a one-way ticket and moved across the world. I had already done some mission trips and things like that. So it wasn't like I just like picked out a place on the map.
How close was that to when Romania was still a commune or part of the,
right?
I mean, it was just
it was
a few years after,
about 10 years. Well, but when I moved, it was about 10 years after the Iron Curtain came down and Romania became a quote unquote free country because of, mm-hmm. you know, a lot of socialism and still rebounding and coming back from all that time in communism. So, met my wife there. We were married there, had our first son during that 5-year span when we were still living there, and then moved back to the States and have been back for a little more than 10 years now.
Okay. And you've been at Lifeway for what, 5, 6 years?
5 years.
Okay.
Yep.
Great. Well, why don't we hit our first question? Same one we ask everybody. I see you brought, you're pulling an Eric Geiger. You brought notes with you.
He brought notes?
Well, that's all right.
These are good questions. We can get him through them.
We can get him to lose his focus.
I bet we can. I bet we can.
First, we can get us to lose our focus, too.
I bet we can.
Who are you learning from right now?
Right now, I'm learning from Barnabas and Todd how to do a good podcast.
No, yes, take notes.
Statler and Waldorf.
No, yeah, I can't talk. I'm taking notes so furiously. I thought about this question and hence the notes. People I work with and people I read. So first of all, I thought of people I work with, and not just you two guys, because I don't work as closely with you.
But mostly us.
It would be fun. But I am the youngest guy on one of the leadership teams at Lifeway that works under Eric Geiger and some of the other places. And I feel that constantly at that table.
Do you remind them of that as well?
I think they remind me more than I remind them.
That's true.
I don't have to remind them. They know. So constantly feel out of my league with some of these people that are just—
Don't let anyone look down on you.
Brilliant leaders. Yeah. Thank you, son of John Piper. I was expecting a Bible verse at some point.
No problem. Got you covered.
So I have learned from this team, and there have been times when I have, you know, seen leaders in action at Lifeway and just think, wow, right, I have a front row seat to learning this at a young age. And so that kind of responsibility really, for me, it doesn't paralyze me. It really empowers me and makes me want to rise to the occasion, you know, to really, to be at that table and to say—
To earn your place.
Yeah, I earn the place at this table and to really want to do well. So I think of the leadership team and people like Eric Geiger that I've learned a lot from and I'm learning from constantly. So people I work with and then people I read. And for me, I like to— I'm one of these guys, when I find an author that really resonates with me or that I can glean a lot of insight from or feel like is really pouring into me, an author from a different time or even a contemporary author, I'm one of these people that wants to just gobble up everything that they've done to really dig down deep into their work and see the world through their eyes to get more insight into today. So a couple of years ago for me, that was John Stott. Global evangelical leader. It's kind of like Billy Graham in the U.S. and John Stott maybe globally.
Was The Cross of Christ sort of his— was that the name of the book?
Yeah, it was a bit— that's a really important book of his, but contemporary Christian, I think, is where you get a lot more of his basic view of the world and cultural engagement and stuff. And so him, and then I'm in a multi-year reading through of all of the work of G.K. Chesterton, author from 100 years ago. Brilliant mind. Sometimes I don't know what in the world he's talking about. He can be so dense. He writes everything. I mean, he writes poems, plays, detective, like Father Brown right now is a BBC thing that they're doing
right now.
Those
are great stories.
Detective stories, fiction, wrote essays and articles, did like the prototype to blogging. He was doing these weekly article stuff. So he could write anything. So I'm reading through that and just—
If listeners were going to read one thing from Chesterton, what would it be?
Oh, I don't know. I guess Orthodoxy.
Yeah, I mean, that's where I would say is sort of his, like, the starting point.
Yeah.
Like you said, he does so much.
I mean, people are actually saying that his long poem, The Ballad of the White Horse, written around World War I, I think, is actually what inspired J.R.R. Tolkien to write The Lord of the Rings. In fact, you can see where it seems like he's following The Ballad of the White Horse in his telling the story of The Lord of the Rings. So anyway, fascinating character, very influential on C.S. Lewis. For me, I go back and I actually read whatever he wrote 100 years ago to the day. And I feel like I'm reading a blog from 100 years ago. Like I'm leaving my time, and right now it's World War I is going on. So obviously, makes today's problem seem smaller.
Where do you find that?
He has his collected works out there. You can get different books and a ton of stuff on Kindle for like no money.
You can get Chesterton's stuff on Kindle for, because it's all public domain. So people sell it for 99 cents.
That had the dates that you were going through.
Yeah. There's the illustrated Daily News back from
1900.
So
that's cool. All right. Our second question is this. What is your main point of emphasis in your leadership right now? I mean, I've watched up close the last 3 or 4 years in how your role has expanded at Lifeway. And you're taking on more and more responsibility beyond, I mean, you know, a million people a week are reading TGP, the Gospel Project.
Yeah, no, we speak in acronyms. No at acronyms. Lifeway, we so do. We at do. LW, right?
That's right. but you know, and which would be enough. However, your role is expanding beyond that. So, what's your main point of emphasis right now?
Well, up until this year, I would be thinking a lot about in terms of emphasis for leadership has been continuing education here, learning from people as I'm leading, but then education, getting my doctorate work finished and all that. I mean, my wife likes to joke that I've been in school for 30 years, you know,
from that kindergarten. Sounds so until, depressing.
It is a little, I think she felt it more than me sometimes, but right now I think I'm learning how to delegate, how to, scale up. I have a member that's joined my team that I'm able to work alongside. And, I would say the main emphasis in leadership for me the last few years, and I'm now beginning to realize this might be the way that I continue to lead for a while, is there's not as much written about it, but it's lateral leadership. It's what does leadership look like when your authority is not focused in an org chart? Like, here's your department. Totally, yeah. Here's all the people you oversee. What does it look like to lead where all your influence is through credibility, trust, respect over time? It's earned influence that then filters down through the organization. So that is, for some people, they don't see that as real authority. And so they're frustrated by that because rather just see, I oversee a department
or
of 40 people.
If they're not emotionally intelligent, they have no idea how to navigate that.
It's difficult.
Because they're in a new world where there's not a clear hierarchy.
Yeah.
Right.
So one of the things that's happened even within our organization and across, I think, many organizations across the business world is they're becoming flat. There is no longer multiple layers of leadership and hierarchy and
departments
and process
and managers and
mid-level managers and all the things of the past are quickly going by the wayside. There are more and more companies and organizations using contractors. So it's becoming less about what you can do. It's becoming less about hourly work and more about what you can accomplish. There's so many things that are good about it, but we're definitely in a time of flux. So how have you seen that? How have you seen that change personally just within the last 5 years?
Well, it's been helpful for me to see some of the most influential people at Lifeway hardly have any direct reports or like departments that they oversee. So some of the people who are wisest, most experienced, but you don't judge their leadership quality and ability by the size of the people of the department that they oversee. Mm-hmm. You see how they bring that expertise and wisdom to bear in all sorts of other situations. So that's been encouraging to me, is to see there are other people doing that. Like, I'm not the only lateral leader at Lifeway. What has been challenging though is, it's harder to know if you're succeeding in your role because it's not as clear cut in an org chart. You know, you're not getting more and more oversight of more and more managers. So you have to, when you see your influence expanding, you have to see that is one of the things that's telling you that you're doing a good job.
It's a qualitative measure instead of a quantitative.
That's right.
You know, because if you are working with editors across the board, they all have different direct reports.
That's
they
right.
all report to different bosses. But if there's a qualitative effect of ideally of what you're doing, helping them edit more effectively, look for different things, bring more focus to the work, more of a singular message or voice or things like that. And it's, but yeah, but none of that is something you can look at and go, well, it sold more copies or something definitively measurable.
But with Trevin in particular, I think just in watching solid lines and dotted lines, it's not always the solid lines that, you know, mean the most difference. There's a lot more people with dotted lines that you have, you know, relationship to, semi oversight of, or just responsibility to, because much of leadership is
or just earn trust where if, like in your case, Trevin, you're a person who people go to and they're say, when they say, hey, we have a question about this blog post, this whatever, should we, how should we manage this to make sure that it fits Lifeway's message?
Right.
For example, I mean, we have a standard we have to uphold. So you're the guy who people go to, even though it's not like that's on your job description as, you know, the answer man for blog posts or that kind of stuff.
That on the job description. I feel like
you get those requests 20 times a week.
That's true. And I think part of working through this is recognizing that it is earned trust. Mm-hmm. So you can't simply step into a role like this and expect to have that right away. For me, it's been good that I've had, I've got the gospel project alongside. There's built up credibility mm-hmm. over the years now that this is happening. But this emphasis for me is definitely the one that I think will continue for the next few years. That I'll need to really focus on and continue to grow in that.
Well, there's not a point of arrival with it. There's always room for improvement for the people who are under you as well as yourself. Because if it's development, there's always a next level, a next skill, a next area of knowledge to grow in.
That's right.
To continue to get better.
So let's move into our third question now and ask what is an obstacle that you're facing and that you're leading yourself or your team through right now?
Okay, well, this connects quite a bit with what we were just talking about with lateral leadership because where those dotted lines are, mm-hmm. That is an obstacle whenever your influence is expanding and you're moving into new territory, you're bumping up against different people, new people, people that you might not have worked with before. And in those situations, the obstacle and the challenge is how do you prove and demonstrate to people that you haven't worked with before that you're encroaching into their territory a little bit is to strengthen them, to supplement what they're doing, not to compete, not to be on their turf, so to speak. You're not really coming in a threatening manner, but you're actually coming in a strengthening and a helping manner. That is a challenge.
I would encourage you to stop swearing at them when you meet them, Trevin. That doesn't help.
It goes back to that emotional intelligence that you were talking about, right? You
got to
get out some of that anger.
And your medication. Be sure to take that.
No, but that's a challenge. And I think that's a challenge that is always going to be, and that's a challenge for the hierarchical kind of leader mm-hmm. too, but because then you get the passive aggressive thing where the org chart is at least any kind of resistance that I feel when I'm working with other people, usually it's out in the open because they don't have to be
they don't have to worry about their job if they push back against you.
No,
you're not the boss, so to speak.
No. And so when there's that resistance, then sometimes it is the fault of the person. But sometimes when I do sense a little bit of resistance in some of the areas I get to work with, I throw that back to myself and say, okay, I've got to do a better job communicating what it is I'm doing, how it's different from what they might think that I'm trying to do.
Right.
And where they're feeling threatened, and then come alongside and really prove that I'm there as a support and a help.
Even if it is their fault, because you don't have the authoritative, you don't have the job title to say, do what I say, it's still your responsibility to figure out how to get around their fault.
Yeah, and you can do that in one of two ways. You can actually go to the person who does have authority to get them to do what you say. And there have been a few times when I've had to take that approach to get work through and get stuff done and decisions made. I don't think, though, that should be number one. I think
it doesn't build a lot of relational
capital. No, not at all. You got to win over people first. Yeah. If you win them over, then I think you're in a much better posture to grow and to do good things.
It hasn't been very long ago, and you know, I won't name names or anything, but you know, Trevin and I were going back and forth about a particular person that we were working with that we wanted to work with, and whether or not we should work with that person. And we went back and forth, and you know, I don't know, maybe 3 or 4 times, but I remember saying to Trevin, who I don't report to, but I said, if you tell me this is the way I need to go, I'm going to do that. Like I'm going to defer to your wisdom and your, you know, what you have been given. He's been given a job and doesn't necessarily have the authority, but he's got the oversight and responsibility of that, and the way he carries himself and the way that he interacts on that subject. I can just totally see that, you know, our conversation was, I think, a perfect example of that coming out in play.
That's a good point. I think the flip side of that is usually in those situations, unless it pertains to the gospel project, which I, you know, my name is stamped on, and that's kind of where the authority is a little more than dotted line. But in a situation like that, I don't remember our correspondence or our conversation about this particular thing, but I'm thinking, I probably was saying, I'm not telling you, you have to do this.
Exactly. Yep. It's exactly
what you
said.
I'm giving you my input and
sort of
my
your sense of how things would be best.
Right.
Yeah.
Your last words to me were, I'm not telling you, you know, that you have to do this, but this is,
you asked for,
this
for
is
the
what I would,
unvarnished
this
opinion.
This is what I would do.
So, yeah.
And, you know, and I basically said, okay, well, this is what I think we should do. If you don't think so, I'm not going to do it. And so I
so multiply those conversations out in the organization by, you know, about 10,
yeah,
10 times that. And that's a lot, of my,
well, Barnabas
my
and
job
I are
that.
Very good boys, and we cause very little problems.
Right. We rarely, never push the envelope.
We rarely end up having
a
conversation
in the principal's
like this
office.
With
Trevin. Yeah.
I've never thought of myself as a principal. That's kind of funny.
Well, I was thinking of Geiger, but
yeah. Okay, I was about to say, yeah, that's my, no, that makes a lot more sense.
You're the guidance counselor. Yeah.
Guys, yeah.
I think there's a way to do this better.
That's funny.
All right, well, let's take a turn from the work here at Lifeway. You mentioned earlier, you met your wife in Romania, got married there, had your first child there. You have other children. How many? 3 or 4 now?
3.
3 total? Yep. Okay. So the question is, what does leadership in your home look like? So let's leave Lifeway, head to Murfreesboro, and answer that question.
Leadership at home, I take responsibility as husband and father to set the tone for what the culture of our house is going to be. And so when the culture is not what it should be, if it's not warm, if we're, you know, too sharp with each other, if it's too easy for us to lose patience, temper, things like that, I look at myself and say, regardless of where that's coming from, whether it's my wife or my kids, I've got to own that. I've got to take responsibility. This is the culture of the house that I'm supposed to be leading. So I think a lot of leadership at home comes from setting the tone. How can I make sure that I am?
It's a bit of that lateral leadership kind of principle, because you could put your foot down and tell people things, but it works far better if you can win them and convince them.
It does. And it's harder at home, though.
Yes.
It's harder at home because everybody, okay, so at work, everybody's supposedly on their best behavior, right? Not everyone, but most people are. But,
one third of the people in this room are on their best behavior.
But at home, it's where, you know, it's more relaxed, right? Mm-hmm. So where everyone's on their best behavior at school or at church, at home is where the real you comes out. So that's always a challenge. How do you set the tone the right way? And I mean, there are things that we got to put our foot down on. You know, I've written before about, you know, we're in a hyperconnected world. So you got to make decisions on, you know, when do you put the phone down? When do you have, you know, good family time where it's just family doing stuff? How, we set limits on our kids' electronics time, just because, I mean, kids will be on their phones or in their, you know, DS, Wii, whatever, just for long amounts of time. So the question is not, hey, well, how do we do away with this, but how do we make sure that our kids are well-rounded, that they know how to play, that they know how to be outside, that they know how to read a book, that they know how to have a conversation, you know,
right.
All
they
those
know how
kinds
to start their own radio show.
That's my childhood.
Make their own music videos of different things. I've heard rumors that their father was really good at that.
Music videos is not me.
Didn't you do music videos?
No.
Or did you do like dramas and stuff?
We did radio sitcoms.
Oh, sitcoms.
With studio audience laughter.
Okay.
Nobody thought we were funny, but except for the fake studio audience. They thought we were hilarious.
But it's always easier to laugh with people, so they really helped all your other listeners, yeah. I'm sure.
How old were you in the
U.S.? I'd say from the time I was about 11 till about 13.
You know, I confuse the music videos because of your deep love for CCM.
Okay.
And then your media presence.
You're right. No, we did. By the time I was a teenager, we had switched over from sitcoms to music and DJing and having kids from the student ministry.
Wasn't all the way wrong. I knew there was a seed there.
It was the golden age of CCM. It was a great time to be a teenage DJ.
The question is, can your kids do the same thing, or are they learning to host their own Christian music DJ show?
I mean, our kids are my kids are different than me. We're not the same. I mean, my kids like some of the same stuff I liked as a kid. And I think you got to be careful. And every parent has the tendency, I think, to do this, is to expect your kids to be interested in whatever you are interested in.
Mm-hmm.
So, I've watched more football the last year than in my entire life because my 11-year-old son is getting into that and is liking watching this and discussing it.
If you ever have any questions you need to ask, I'll help you out.
Yeah,
I've
learned a lot. Football was not – so I've always been a soccer player, and he's been playing soccer, and that's been great. But I've not – football, you know, when you're as busy as I am in lots of stuff, you can't do everything. So sports has been not one of those things. Well, now because it's an interest of his, mm-hmm. I'm jumping into that. You know, I've downloaded Clash of Clans on my phone 2 years ago because he wanted to do Clash of Clans and I wanted to be involved and be there. And now my bass is so much better than his, right?
not really fair. I feel like you might have a level of strategic thinking that your 11-year-old hasn't quite developed.
Yeah, and maybe, a larger bank account.
No, I have not. I've not spent money yet, although we've talked about it. But so some of that leading means listening and seeing where mm-hmm. your kids are and wanting to, it's okay to guide them. But yeah, I don't want my kids to ever feel bad that they're not just like me.
Right.
In a certain way. So, and then on the spiritual side of things, I mean, it's one thing to go to church. It's another thing to connect what you're learning in church and what you're learning at school or learning in your Bible reading. It's another thing to connect that to real life and just in daily flow of conversation. So spiritual leadership in that sense tends to be more informal. And just day to day, what conversations look like, mm-hmm. and man, take advantage of bedtime. Put your kids to bed at a decent hour, but when you go to pray with them, let them talk because they really
don't want to go to sleep, and they're going to come up with 100 good questions.
But they do talk more.
Yes,
it's amazing the kinds of things, like some things that are happening at school they would never tell you right when they get home from school. You know, they get in, they got to do their homework. It's like, how was your day? It was fine. You know, that mm-hmm. kind of thing.
Yep.
There's something about 8 o'clock at night when you're tucking them in or you're praying or when they'll say stuff, you'll get a better glimpse. And so, I like to take some time and just let that be. I usually put the kids to bed because I like to give my wife some time just to unwind.
To
She's
un-mom
had them more
for
during
a,
the day than
bit.
I have,
yeah.
You know, and, but for me, that's a time I can really get some good talking in. So.
Well, going back, not quite to when you were DJing or when you were running your own radio station, but just going back to when you were 20, what would you tell your 20-year-old self about preparing to lead?
Okay. This question always puzzles me. So you're going to have to help me out here because it feels like it's the kind of question that you're asking someone who you're wanting to know what it is they did in their 20s that they shouldn't have done, or what it is they did in their 20s that they...
Fremen didn't do anything in his 20s he shouldn't have done.
This is hard for me because I love my 20s. Like, I look back at that decade and think, man, 5 years in mission work in Romania.
I did too.
Five
it
years
was
on
fun.
Staff.
If it wasn't fun, you weren't doing it right. But I'm just saying, it's...
What about something you know now that you have learned in the years since that it would have helped you to know then?
Yes. For example, might be a...
Okay. One of my main things that I learned in my 20s, I wish I had told myself when I was 20, is that experience on a resume does not matter as much as relationships. That jobs come through relationships more than resumes. And that was a... that was a learning curve for me coming back from Romania, being so sort of out of touch from the church world here. That was a learning curve and a source of frustration for a couple of years. I was thinking, you know, I've got more to offer here than I could.
But nobody knows you.
Yeah. And the other thing I would say to my 20-year-old self would be to say, I would say, enjoy the moment you're at for what it is. Even if you're leaning forward and you're anticipating the future, you know, like if you're the John Mayer song, you know, the waiting on the world to change.
Yeah.
The world one day will, but actually enjoy that where you are without always looking forward to what you're doing next. Because, you know, we always like to say in leadership that you're always preparing for the next step in leadership, which is true. And I've seen that in my life. I think that's really important. But at the same time, I want to say, enjoy the stage for what it is. Even though you know that is preparing you for the next stage, don't miss out on being faithful and joyful in the stage you're in, because that is that's key to your overall state of mind. Your
part of that enjoying is investing in it, and that sets you up better. Because if you are fully present, you're going to be more invested in your personal relationships and your relationship with the Lord and developing whatever skills in learning different pieces of knowledge that will better you for whatever happens next.
Yeah, your stepping stone to your next role is actually a bigger stepping stone if you don't treat it as a stepping stone.
Yes.
If that makes sense. If you actually treat it as what it is,
it does.
and know that is going to be what launches you to the next thing. But
because so many people sacrifice their now on the altar of the next, like they just lay down everything that they have now, thinking about.
I'm going to tweet that.
That might be a Brad Lomanickism.
No, that is.
I was thinking that myself, but then,
here's where it's from. Yeah. Because I had to write our church's view on a specific subject, and I said we will not sacrifice what is biblical, effective, or efficient on the altar of tradition. And so that's if you follow me on Twitter, you know that I'm going to take there's multiple things like that that I'm going to take and rearrange and use them in different situations. It's like a multi-tool. I'm going to say, oh, and my undergrad was philosophy, and all philosophy is, especially Western philosophy, is taking what someone said, flipping it around, putting a question mark on the end of it, and making them wrong. That's all Western philosophy is. All you do is learn how to, you're just like, okay, talk for 30 seconds. Just talk about anything for 30 seconds, and I'll show you how you're wrong. That's the
this
whole thing.
This is why Todd Atkins is such a delightful person.
That's right. What I think that did.
Well, this is what he would tell his 20-year-old self. Stop doing that. It's annoying.
It probably would be. But I do think it helps prepare, and you know, it helped shape the weird way my brain works. And as far as process and how different systems and things come together. So while annoying in your 20s, those things, if you give yourself to some of that stuff, it could actually return dividends down the road.
You sum that up really well, though, that don't sacrifice the now on the altar of the next. Like, don't, even if you're looking ahead of the next, be present in the now. I think I would tell myself in my 20s, because there were several times in my 20s where I needed to hear that and have someone tell me that.
Well, I think that is a good place to land this. It's always nice to leave people with a kind of a concrete piece of advice, something to take away. So, Trevin, thanks for joining us on this. It's always fun to talk with you, and I think we said some insightful things, or you did.
Hopefully.
Todd and I said a lot of other stuff, but before we sign off, I do want to point people to your blog, and being the awesome show host that I am, I did not look it up. Is it just TrevinWax.com?
Yeah, if you go there, okay. It's hosted by the Gospel Coalition, but that's what'll get you there.
So Trevin is a writer, amongst many other things, which is why he has the chops to help authors and editors. So TrevinWax.com, and you'll see he blogs regularly. He's written three or four books, and those will be linked to there as well. So make sure to check that out. Thanks so much for listening, everybody. We greatly appreciate it. We will be back next week with another great guest. Thanks again. Have a good one.
Thank you for listening to the 5 Leadership Questions podcast. Before you go, we wanted to remind you about the free e-booklet, Developing Your Leadership Pipeline, that will help your church get started training leaders more effectively. To download, go to lifeway.com/churchleaders and select the free e-booklet tab at the top. Again, that's lifeway.com/churchleaders and select the free e-booklet tab, where you can download the e-booklet for free.